Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada, 32 Thoughts as well. First of all, good afternoon, Elliot. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good. You know what today is the anniversary of? And I only was reminded about this as I scrolled through Twitter and came across Mike Comito's Twitter feed. You know what today is the anniversary of?
No, I don't. What is it?
Shoot. On this day in 2005, Merrick Malik in the shootout and the... I'm sure you have a memory of this one. I'm not sure whether what I liked better, whether it was the between-the-legs shot on Olaf Kolzig or if it was the Statue of Liberty celebration afterwards, which I think very quietly is, might be one of my favorite celebrations of any hockey player. Just real quick before we get... Rangers are playing in about an hour here against the Boston Bruins. Take us back. What do you remember from first seeing that between-the-legs goal?
Well, I think that the one thing I remember the most, I love the most, was his reaction was like, of course I scored that. I don't know why anybody is surprised. And I remember, the Rangers players even said that they didn't have any idea that he could do something like that. And yeah. He was like, yeah, big deal. I mean, of course I could. I have to remember the quotes about this, but... Who was coaching the Rangers at the time? Was it Rennie? Was he the coach?
Ooh, I'm not sure. This is 2000. Well, I can check right
well,
now.
Well, whoever it was said that they were getting down late on the bench. And I think he was the 14th shooter. And
they were going to put the backup netminder in before Merrick Malik. Oh, yeah.
I remember something like the coach. I think it, I want to say it was
Tom
Rennie.
It was Tom Rennie. It wasn't John Tortorella. It was Tom Rennie.
Rennie was looking down the bench because at that point in time, you're trying to figure out who you're going to use. As you said, you're thinking about the backup goalie. And he said that Malik was the one guy who seemed confident. That he looked at him and he was – I remember I was talking to him about it. He said that because years earlier or not long earlier, I think it was the year earlier – Jonathan Toews scored three times in the shootout in the Canada-U.S. World Junior game.
Correct.
And Craig Hartsburg, I think, was the coach for there. And that was a situation where you could use someone over and over again. And Craig Hartsburg talked about coaching in that situation and trying to figure out who wants to shoot and who doesn't. And he said that Jonathan Toews was clearly looking at him like, I want to shoot. I'm going to score. And then, so I asked Rennie about that, and he said that it's funny because looking down the bench, Malik was one of the guys who looked confident, who's like, yep, yep. And then he goes and he scores that goal, and he pulls the move like, yeah, I don't know why anyone's surprised. I always remembered that about it the most.
Hey, while we're talking about shootouts here to start, I never thought we'd go down this path, but here we are. You know, there are... In the NHL, there's a history of superstar players that don't do well on penalty shots, shootouts, whatever. I mean, the Sedins, not interested. Jaromir Jagr, brutal, like not interested.
Again,
and you know what? The biggest one was Wayne Gretzky. And Mark Crawford and Nagano, you know, still to this day, oh, how come you didn't put Gretzky in?
Yeah.
The real problem was their best shooter was in the stands injured, and that was Joe Sakic. But I always thought that history never really took into account when it came to this decision by Mark Crawford not to put Gretzky in against Dominik Hasek, the fact that Gretzky wasn't good at these things. Like
was an interview once that Gretzky did with Gord Stellick when we were at the score. Mm-hmm. Gord Stellick did the interview, and it was a sit-down with Gretzky. And Gord asked him about it, and I can't remember what Gretzky's quote was, but it was something along the lines of, I was good when it mattered or something like that. I always remembered that interview because Gretzky gave Gord a real window into how he felt about it. And it was a pretty clear window. It was not opaque. It was very transparent. Yeah. So I think that Wayne Gretzky clearly, I remember watching that interview and Wayne Gretzky clearly felt that he was more than capable enough in that moment.
So I've talked to various coaches about that, and you know what the common refrain is? Do the political thing and just put him in there because you don't want your reputation to die because you didn't put Gretzky in. If he doesn't score, it's going to be on him. Don't make it about you. just play the politics of it, even if you think that he's not going to score or he's not good at these things, because he wasn't great at those. Put him in anyway.
It's not even the politics of it. It's not. It's that, you know, if I was coaching and I had Wayne Gretzky on my bench at that point, I would just say it's Wayne Gretzky.
Tonight, it is Vancouver and CBJ. So here we are once again talking about the Vancouver Canucks. Elvis Merzlikins gets a start for CBJ, and he's really good. And Columbus is really
good. He's great. Pad set looks really good.
The blues?
The electric blue pads, they look fantastic.
They look great. I don't know how much more we can add to the Vancouver conversation other than here's another game about Vancouver.
I will say this. I'm looking forward to this tonight. You know, there's been one of the toughest things about the last 24 to 48 to 72 hours last week in Vancouver is trying to separate fact from fiction. You know, what is true and what isn't. And it's challenging because you're hearing so much and you really want to be accurate with what you know and what you can say. You know, Dan Murphy's hosting tonight. I know they've been working on a lot of stuff about trying to figure out where everything actually stands. So I know he's hosting actually from Toronto tonight. I'm looking forward to seeing what Murph and those guys have come up with, because I know they've been working hard on, you know, trying to figure out exactly, you know, what is going on. They were obviously with the team in Pittsburgh the other night. Like I said, he's hosting from Toronto this evening, but I know he's been working on it a lot. So I'm really looking forward to the broadcast tonight to see what Murph and Ian and the other guys come up with.
Anything more to push the story forward, or is it all the song remains the same? Tonight's another game, and we'll see what happens at the press conferences afterwards.
Well, you know, I think that, and there's one before too, right? Like Green's going to meet with the media around 4:30, so we'll see what happens there. I don't know if it's so much the song remains the same, Jeff. I just think that, like, I think they're in the process of figuring out, like, something is going to happen. I don't think there's any much doubt about that anymore. I just think it depends on the schedule and what they're going to do first and what kind of timeline they're talking about here. I definitely think the Canucks have started to research different candidates, and that doesn't just necessarily mean coaching or just front office. I think it's kind of a bunch of things that they're considering. You know, I think, as we've said, they're trying to be very careful about not making any moves that they regret for a long time. But I think the process is underway. And what I can't pin down yet with any certainty is, you know, what's going to be the first move and what the timeline is. I did think, and our podcast is dropping in shortly, I did think there was going to be something yesterday briefly. There was a time yesterday where I thought that maybe something was going to happen, but obviously it didn't. So, you know, we'll see where this goes.
We'll keep our schedules cleared for an emergency podcast, should it necessitate. Trade chatter, you talked about it in 32 Thoughts blog that you published yesterday, starting to pick up, but man, it is so hard to make moves right now, more so than ever, with so many teams up against the cap, so much is money in, money out. Maybe this is why we see more teams frisky on the waiver wire. I don't know. But how tough is it right now to make trades, and how much is the chatter picking up?
I think it's definitely picking up. I mean, you know me, I'm a November 1st guy. I have my November 1st stat. Between 2006 and 19, 9 of 59 teams that were 4 points out November 1st made the playoffs. But, you know, a lot of people use the U.S. Thanksgiving, which I think it's 77% of the teams that have been in a playoff position.
I think we need to push it a week since we started the season a week later.
Oh, don't bring like facts into this. Like, go away with your accuracy and facts, Merrick. That stuff is garbage.
Very well. Carry on. Anyway,
you know, I just think that this is a time where people start to think, okay, you know, we kind of have a better idea of what we are or what we aren't. And plus, I think there's a little bit of separation now. So I do think it's starting to pick up. I've started to hear some teams that maybe, you know, think of some things, you know, and, you know, we'll kind of see where we go from there. But, you know, as you said, it's really hard. You know, a lot of teams are in long term. A lot of teams are right at the cap. There's not a lot of room here and there.
Something that that Maddie and I did on the show yesterday to finish it up, sort of, you know, quarter of the way into the season, do some awards. I'm curious from your point of view, biggest surprises, biggest disappointments. Now that, you know, as you mentioned, we have enough games, we have enough runway here that we can see trends and teams know what they have, despite the fact that they may be going through injury situations for some teams, COVID situations. Yep. Who or what has surprised you the most, and who or what has disappointed Elliot Friedman the most so far?
Well, I would say one of the biggest surprises has been Columbus, the team that's playing Vancouver tonight. You know, I've been really pleasantly surprised by how good they've been. And I think Anaheim would be another, even though they've now lost a couple. I think they were a team that was definitely a lot better. I think the California teams as a whole have been better than, you know, we thought. Calgary, I think, would have to be another one that you would look at and say real pleasant surprise this year. They're really trending in the right direction. They play hard. And you made the point on the podcast, actually, one of your rare good points, that you know, when you're playing the way you play, you know, you create a chance to win when even your starting goalie isn't playing, because the team plays just as well in front of Ladar as it plays in front of Markstrom, and it makes it easier for the goalies to win. So I think that's a great, I think that's a great point you made, and I think it's a reason that you'd look at Calgary as a pleasant surprise. I think your biggest disappointments, I mean, we've spent a lot of time in the last week talking about Vancouver. I think they've been disappointing. I think Montreal's been disappointing. I don't think there's any question about that. And, you know, I think a lot of people would talk about the Islanders. And, you know, the COVID situation is definitely part of that, no question. But, you know, they haven't been themselves, and it's definitely been an issue for them.
Would you throw, I want to pause here on the Islanders in a sec, but would you throw the Ottawa Senators into that mix? I mean, this was supposed to be, okay, the rebuild is over, now we're going to start, you know, at least nudging up around a playoff position. We all know what the Ottawa Senators have been through this season.
Yeah.
But would you consider it a disappointment so far?
I think you would. You know, I think we were hoping that they would have some staying power. Like, how many teams this year talked about playing meaningful games, you know, later in the season? You know, New Jersey did. Actually, I think you have to add New Jersey to the list of surprises, because I think we all thought that when Hughes went down, they'd be in big trouble, and they've stayed in it. But Ottawa was a team that talked about that. You know, they wanted to have meaningful games at the end of the year. Excuse me. And it doesn't look like that's there. Now, they got hit hardest by COVID. They're the only team that's had games postponed. But I still think you'd look at it and say, like, I don't worry as much about, you know, like, I don't worry as much about Stützle not scoring. You know, I don't worry about Pinto getting hurt. Like, he's still learning the league and things like that. Like, I'm not as much worried about some of the individuals, but I do think you have to be worried about Matt Murray. And, you know, suddenly you're sitting here, and like, the Senators have a lot of goalies, and I think they're hopeful that some of this is going to work out, but you are hoping that, you know, Matt Murray would get you from here to there, and it doesn't look like it's happening, right? So I would think you're disappointed if you're Ottawa, that's for sure.
Islanders, I swear we'll try to cheer up this conversation by the end of it, but we'll stick with one more dark cloud here. The Islanders, on a scale of 1 to 10, how concerned is Elliot Friedman? Because we look at the Islanders, we keep saying, they're too good, and Barry Trotz, you know, Lou's going to do something, and it'll all be fine. But as every game goes on, we keep saying, that's another squandered opportunity. They have more games against the Metropolitan where their hole can get dug even deeper for each.
Well, I would say this, Jeff. I would say I've I've gone, like, the concern point to me is now I'm past that. Now I'm at the point of, okay, what do the Islanders think about this? What's Lou Lamoriello's plan of action now? So I think I was concerned a couple of weeks ago. Like, I really thought this was going to be a great year for the Islanders. And then, you know, then you're concerned. And now you're almost looking at the reality and you're saying, okay, what does this mean? I think that's the biggest question now is how does Lou Lamoriello look at the big picture and say, now that we are where we are, where am I going from here? Do I write this off as just an unfortunate year where circumstances destroyed us? Or do I look at it and say there's some surgery I have to do here? Like, to me, that's my big question. And I do kind of wonder if, you know, one of the things that he's going to have to do out of this is say, is there something I have to target like we don't have? And that, to me, is the most fascinating thing about the Islanders is the vision of the general manager and what he's going to do about that.
Well, I mean, we've circled the blue line there and kind of said, okay, look, Exhibit A. By the way, the Islanders play the Penguins later on this evening. Watch that one on Sportsnet East, Ontario and West, starting at 7:30 Eastern. And, you know, as you look at it, there's only one player on that blue line right now that's played double-digit games this season, and that's Scott Mayfield. Everybody else is playing. You know, Robin Salo was recently called up. He's only played 3. Sebastian Aho, 5. Grant Hutton, 3. Thomas Hickey, 1. Paul Ledoux, 1. Like, we all know about injuries and COVID for this team, but, man, it's tough to be competitive against any team in the NHL when that's your back end.
Well, I think also, too, that you look at their structure and you think the structure is going to bail them out, right? At least that's the way I think. Is that structure bails them out. And even when they were healthier this year, that wasn't happening. Like, I think, you know, like, in like the thing about the Islanders, I look at a loss of a guy like Letty, and I look at the loss of a guy like Eberle. Like, if you were naming the five most important Islanders, you know, maybe those two wouldn't have been on your list, but those are good players. And those are players who get you into the playoffs. And, you know, I think they've been robbed of a little bit of depth because of that. And I would think that, you know, like, again, you wouldn't say that those were necessarily the most important Islanders, but they were still important. And they got you into the playoffs. And now you don't have those guys anymore. And I think that's been a factor. You brought up Taves and kind of forget because that was 2 years ago. But anytime you lose depth, you know, it affects you. Like, this is a league. I was talking to Martin Brodeur this week. We were talking about the jerseys. But I asked him, you know, what do you think about the Devils? Why have you guys persevered? And the first thing he said was depth. Mm-hmm. And I just think this is a league where that's the most important thing you have. If you don't have depth, you're not going to have success. And, you know, I think some of it is unfortunate circumstance for New York. But I think over the last couple of years, they've lost some guys who were very important depth pieces for them.
Really quickly, a couple of things before we wrap up. You write about a gentleman by the name of Ryan Smith in your blog, who owns the Utah Jazz of the NBA. Why should hockey fans know that name?
Well, you know, when Fenway Sports Group went through its purchase with the Penguins, which we're still waiting to close, and, you know, the guesstimate number I'm starting to hear is 875. So we'll see if that's actually correct.
Some happy owners out there.
Oh, yeah, they'll like that number. One of the names I heard that was potentially looking at the team, too, is Ryan Smith, who owns the Utah Jazz. And, like, that was denied to me, but I thought it was interesting that it kind of got around. I listened to him on Adrian Wojnarowski's podcast after he bought the team from the Miller family, which was the longtime owners of the Jazz. He's a really interesting guy. He's very smart. He's been very successful. And he's the kind of thinker that leagues like. And if he is interested in an NHL franchise at some point, I think he'd be the kind of guy that, you know, you're looking at and saying, yeah, we'd love to have him involved.
Further to that end, but personalizing it for MLSE, Matt Marchese, our producer, wanted me to ask you about your note about the future of MLSE now that we know that Fenway Sports Group has knocked on the door. Ultimately, nothing came of it. But as we've talked about before, it's not the last time someone's going to knock on MLSE's door.
Well, the one thing, the next sentence I was going to write that I took out was the first thing that they have to do is find you a new producer. I just want you to know that, Jeff and Matt.
Okay.
Like that was my next line, but it was edited out of the blog. You know,
put it in every week. Put it in every week until Rory leaves it.
I just think that MLSE, like this whole thing with Fenway Sports Group, as I said, like everybody's watching this, and people are wondering where is this going to go, and there's obviously been change atop of Rogers, and people are going to wonder what that means for me. Like, look, the Globe and Mail is reporting that we might be selling the Blue Jays, right?
Or and we have of it,
Pieces of it. And we have 37.5% of Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment. You don't think people there are wondering, okay, what's all this going to mean for us?
Of course.
So,
of course.
And once you've been asked once, like, there's no way Fenway Sports Group is going to be the only person to ask Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment, and they're going to get asked again. So I think people are kind of wondering, you know, what all of this means. I mean, the one interesting thing, Jeff, was someone said to me yesterday, what do you think MLSE is worth? Arena, Leafs, Raptors, Toronto FC, Argos, that stadium, the field that FC the Argos play at, plus all the real estate. Like, what do you think that's worth? It's
massive.
A massive number. It's a massive number.
Yeah, I don't know what that price tag would be. I don't even know how we.
That's what we call in the business Merrick money.
Oh, please, no. My money makes noise in my pocket. That's Friedman money, that long, the money that when he walks down the street, you don't even hear it because it's nice, big, quiet money. Mine's all jingle, jingle, jingle. That's the nickels and dimes.
The young generation doesn't carry cash anymore, Jeff. You know?
No, I know. I was trying to think of something clever to say, and that's all I could spit out. I want to end on this one. A little bit later on, I'm looking forward to this. Detouring away from hockey briefly, though he's going to weigh in on it because he's a big sports fan. Barry Keane's going to drop by. Now, I've known Barry for a long time. Barry's the drummer for the Gordon Lightfoot. Been with Gordon for decades. Massey Hall reopened to downtown Toronto yesterday. Gordon Lightfoot, the perfect person to reopen it. And listen, like Chris Hatfield is there. Like it's a wonderful night. So I'm going to talk to Barry a little bit later on. I'm getting, this is like Massey Hall, like originally opened in like 1894. It's been through a number of different renovations. For me, it's the best concert venue I've ever been to. Maybe the best speaking venue I've ever been to is, I mean, Winston Churchill spoke there. You have a thought on Gordon Lightfoot? I'm guessing you're a fan, but I don't
know. Of course.
Know.
Well, Barry was on a roundtable once with Bob McCowan and myself, and I think Damian Cox was the fourth. Mm-hmm. So I was on a roundtable with Barry once. Massey Hall, for me, though, I've never seen Gordon Lightfoot there. The best thing I saw there was Chris Rock do stand-up. I'm a big Chris Rock guy, so I saw him do stand-up there, and I loved it. But I always remember... Sundown was the last song at my grade 9 high school graduation prom.
Oh,
that's
and were
my
you,
Gordon
hang on.
Lightfoot memory.
Were you leaning up against the wall for the final song,
no,
Elliot Friedman?
No, I had in a stunning upset, I actually had a dance for that.
A stunning upset. Yeah. No one saw that coming. Who had that one? On the
Certainly show? I didn't. I'll tell you that much.
All right, looking forward to Barry coming up a little bit later on. Okay, we'll check you out on the Magic Eyeball tomorrow night on Hockey Night. Thanks, Friedge.
You too, Jeff. Speak to you then.
All right, Elliot Friedman from 32 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada.